Final Hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, the O-Dog will be back later. Darren Dreger will be alongside. Seeing Chris Johnston tweeting out that Nazem Kadri has entered the building down in Colorado or in Tampa on the Avs team bus. First time he's arrived early for puck drop in the Cup Final. That would suggest he's going to give it a go tonight.
Yeah.
And I give him full credit, man. Like, he's playing hurt. He's coming off surgery. He was written off by myself included. I didn't see it happening. I'm not sure how effective he'll be. And if he's not effective, he better get off the ice. You know, they better get him out of the lineup because you're in a Cup Final here, man. You can't have a guy out there just playing for pride. He's got to be playing to produce.
I think he'll be fine. I think it'd be interesting to see if Darren Helm comes out. Because Helm's been a guy who's been quite effective on that fourth line, showing some speed. He's a, you know, a veteran guy who's tough to play against, all that type of stuff. So I think Kadri, you slide him in farther down in the lineup. Unless he's going to take his normal line rush.
We'll find out.
Well, it comes back to that theory. If you put the jersey on, you're perceived as healthy, and that's it. Go play. I think his adrenaline will be going. He's going to want to be a difference maker. I wouldn't be shocked by the end of the game, he's right back up, kind of playing in that second line role, second power play, that type of stuff, knowing Nas and his competitive drive. But is he going to be able? Is Tampa going to target him and chop here, chop there? I would, and I know that sounds terrible.
I fully expect that. But yeah, you're playing for keeps. It's
exactly.
Cup Final.
Trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Going to happen.
Yeah. I wish him well, but I think it's going to be a really good game, and I think it is going to be a close game tonight. I think it is going to be good hockey, both ends. Let's not forget, Nick Paul's not at 100%. He was dragging himself around the ice the other night. Kucherov left. I know it was late in the game, so did he have a stinger? Was it something that he was fine the next day or even after the game and maybe Cooper was playing it up a little bit to try and, get Colorado off? But it sounds like he's playing tonight. So, it's not like Tampa's 100% healthy themselves. Like, they're going to need all their big guns firing on all cylinders. The one guy I circle, and I know he's played well. He played well last game. I'm waiting for a big night from Hedman. Like, bomb from the point. He's missed a couple of his shots in the power play. Mm-hmm. He's usually a 30-minute guy, one goal, two assists, hard to play against, just a dominant force. You have to wonder how motivated he is watching Makar take that home last night.
Right, in his house Tampa.
Yeah, and, Hedman came in, I think, third in voting, which is very respectable, and he should be there every year. He's one of those perennial... every year you write him in. But I know he doesn't care about hardware, but there is a layer of pride with the superstars.
Sure, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I understand the nature of a team sport is you have to say, I'd give all that up. Try to achieve both. Hedman's got cup rings, and if he won last night, he could be proud of that and still be committed to trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That's a topic of discussion clearly with Matthews, and he gets dragged in with the team because the Leafs haven't had any playoff success, but he's allowed, and he should be incredibly proud, which he said he was, to win the Hart, to win the Ted Lindsay, to set individual records,
right,
and still obviously be motivated, if not more motivated than ever, because you've done all that now. You've accomplished everything else you can basically accomplish as an individual during an individual season. If you're Matthews,
right,
go out there and chase the team success now. I mean, it's really the only thing left. We'll get into that more with Darren Dreger, a hockey insider, later this hour on Game 4, what we can expect tonight. Braden Point will not play. Down the road in Florida, Paul Maurice hired as the new head coach of the Panthers. We'll get into that with Dregs and more. But the Jays, I think you could say they survived today. It was bases loaded in the eighth inning, and they got out of a jam. They were up big. They were up 9-1 at one point. It got to 9-5 again. Bases loaded, one out in the eighth. They found a way to close that game out. Jays take at least one in Chicago. Both of the losses, though, were right there for them. Like, they battled back in game one. They couldn't get it done because Barrios got lit up. Last night, they blown save by Romano.
Yeah, but
they got a lead in the 10th, lead in the 11th.
And the ump was out to lunch. We got to ask Steve about that.
But that's I don't blame the when you've got a 4-2 lead and leads in the extra innings. I don't care who the ump is. You got to close.
Yeah,
like you've got to close, and it's an excuse to blame the ump. Here's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Where do you stand on that? Obviously, Doug Eddings was awful last night, but the Jays, they got to win that game. You can't blow those leads like they did multiple times last night.
Right. I mean, it's a game you need to win, and yet I get the umpiring. And look, there were plenty of pitches missed on both sides. He missed 26 of them. So he didn't miss 26 pitches that hurt the Blue Jays. You know, he hurt both teams. He had a really bad day. And so the effect of that was Pete Walker getting ejected yesterday. And then obviously the hitting coach getting ejected today. It's a lineup exchange, you know, sort of premeditated, I'm sure, by the Jays. But I think a strong statement made. And so, you know, you can't put things on umpires. You know, there are a lot of other opportunities during the course of a game that can affect it. Yet there could be a singular pitch call that can change the outcome overall. But it's a game where they had opportunities. The Bo Bichette at bat, where he hit the ground ball, the short that they couldn't get the runner in for third, was a tough one for them. Zimmer tried to keep it alive in the 11th inning with a great diving catch to give him an opportunity to at least survive until the 12th. But they just came up short. And look, the White Sox are going to make their run. The White Sox are a really good team. And it looks like they're starting to get some things together a little bit right now. I was a little surprised that in the 11th inning, Tony La Russa opted to pitch to Vladimir Guerrero. Now, and so, you know, Tony's done some weird things this year. But, you know, runners on second and third, two outs, with Vladdy up, he pitches to Vladdy. Now, Kirk's behind him, and I get Kirk's been red hot, but I don't know what you guys would do. Would you pitch to Vladdy, or would you choose to pitch to Kirk? You've got a choice. You need to get one out. Who would
it
you
pitch worked
to?
For them. They got him. Wow. But I was thinking the same thing watching that. Yep.
But you're right. It worked. But I was never one who believed that the end justifies the means. You know, because I want to know what's going to happen the next time, and the next time, and the next time. And so, you know, for me, I set out the game when I played the Blue Jays. I don't want Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be the guy that beats me. If Alejandro Kirk, with what he's become, is the guy who beats me, so be it. But I'm not going to pitch to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, La Russa, it worked for him. But I was surprised by it, one of the things I think of is, you know, you got a manager who's managed, you know, over 2,000 wins in his career. He can do that and not worry about what people think. You know, younger managers probably say, "Yeah, no, I'm going to go by the book." Everybody in the world would think I'd rather pitch to Kirk, even though he's great. You know, it's no disrespect. Excuse me, but I think that in the end, you know, I don't want Vladdy to beat me. But it was a really interesting game. Both teams, though, really burned out their bullpens yesterday. And so getting out to the early lead today for the Jays was critical. And they left Giolito in to take a bit of a beating today when they kept punishing him. And fortunately, the Jays had enough bullpen at the end to try to hold on to their lead.
Steve, I just want to go back to the ump a little bit and put a bow on this. Have you ever had a scenario where either one of your pitching coaches or hitting coaches has been thrown out before the game?
It's not uncommon for the lineup exchange to be an airing of the beefs from the day before. Now, I think that you know, where I don't know if one of my guys ever did that. I will say that I still take the cake because my manager wore a mustache and sunglasses.
Right.
So
yes.
I mean, so where I may not have had that, I had the ultimate of ultimates where there's actually a date every year that on this day in baseball history, it pops up every year that Bobby Valentine was ejected and wore the sunglasses and the fake mustache. So I actually am still the winner in that category.
Yeah, I think you should be proud of that category.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really impressive category. And
thank you very much.
You had to have gone down there afterwards and asked him what the hell he was thinking. Like, what did he think he was accomplishing with the glasses and fake mustache?
You know, I went down there and I walked in and I said, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, no, I'm okay." No. I said, "Are you okay? Like, what are you doing? Like, are you insane? Like, what are you doing? Are you okay?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, you know, I wanted to go back and show the guys. I thought I might loosen them up a little bit." And I'm like, "Bobby, now you're going to get suspended." And I think I told the story that, you know, Len Coleman, the league president, called me and he was so mad. He was so angry about it. And he's like, it's a disgrace. It's an insult to the game. It's disrespect to the game. He says, I'm going to have to suspend your manager for 3 games. And I said, can you make it a week? Can you please make it a week? Like, Len, welcome to my life. Like, I understand you're frustrated. I deal with this every day. Make it a week. I'm begging you.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I can't. Precedent won't let me do that. But and I think he reduced it by a game, too. But excuse me. But it was, yeah, Bobby was an interesting cat, no question about it.
Oh, there's no disputing that. And, you know, you're right about that, the decision by La Russa last night. I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm watching it. I'm like, okay, let me get this straight. There's a base open. It's Vladdy Guerrero Jr. I get that Kirk is behind him. And he pitches to him again, got him out of it. But is that more to do with where Vladdy is at? Although that said, yesterday afternoon he's announced as the AL Player of the Week. He's been completely dialed in. But Kirk has been phenomenal. Like, he's been an incredibly difficult out. Like, is it pumping the tires of Kirk, or was La Russa thinking for whatever reason Vladdy was in a bad spot? Because it's difficult to reason with.
Well, I think the thing about Vladdy is that if you pitch him low, you've got a pretty good chance he's going to hit it into the ground, but he's not going to lift it. And so I think there's a way to pitch to him to be able to get him to do what you want. Now, I think he actually hit a ball that sort of up and in a little bit. It jammed him some when he put it in play.
Yeah.
But I do think this way. And I think the other thing that probably La Russa is thinking about is, okay, well, if we pitch to Vladdy and get him out, then if we end up tied the next inning, he'll be the runner on second. Now, you could say, well, Kirk's not much faster. And, you know, if they're going to start the next inning with Kirk there, but they probably pinch run in that moment for Kirk because of the depth of the catching. And so, you know, it's an interesting decision, although Gabby Moreno ended up pinch hitting too. It's an interesting decision what they're doing with it. La Russa, though, is the manager that when I broadcasted games, he was the one guy that you always had to think along with because he was going to do something to try to save a run or to gain a run during the course of the game. You had to think along with him. He was going to squeeze. He was going to charge in his infielders, you know, thinking with runner at third, less than 2 outs, and he played the infield back. And then, you know, the hitter's thinking, okay, I'll just hit a ground ball up the middle. And then as the pitch is coming, you know, this is something Bobby Valentine did too. He would charge the infielders in to then say, okay, the hitter's going to try to hit a ground ball. Let's now get the runner at home plate. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that these managers do. La Russa has the courage to do the unconventional, as we saw where he ended up intentionally walking Trey Turner when he was ahead in the count 1-2 and to pitch to Max Muncy. And then Muncy hit a 3-run home run. So it doesn't always work the way you want, but La Russa tries some oddball things at times.
Do you think he makes it, Steve? We were talking about the environment that's been created at the ballpark, and I don't think any general manager would want to see it. As soon as they get down or as soon as something happens, they're yelling, fire Tony. I mean, can the general manager shrug that off, or sooner or later? They got a quality ball club there in Chicago, you know, waiting for that team to rebuild, and they're kind of finally there. How do you deal with those chants and what they're saying about them?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. It's a really tough one because you don't ever want to be pressured into a personnel decision because of the fans, you know, because they don't have all the information. They don't always understand. They want things instantaneously. And, you know, as a manager, you're managing today's game and tomorrow's game and next week's game. As you're going through it, you know who you have available. You know who's not available. You know the numbers on circumstances and analytics. And so there are times where managers make decisions that the general manager understands what the manager's doing, even when the fans and the media might not, because you know that a guy might not be available to pitch on a day or be able to hit on a day. And so, you know, I think it's difficult. But inevitably, when things go wrong and the mounting pressure goes to the manager, at some point, usually at the end of the season, when it comes to what can we do to try to sell our team next year because we can't change all the players, what do we do? And there comes a time where you think the fans want there to be a change in the manager because it will give them a different level of hope for next year because they don't have hope with this manager. Now, La Russa is going to make it through the end of the year, but if they don't make the playoffs this year, I don't think he's back next year, and they probably move on in a different direction.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst, the Jays picking up a win today. They're off tomorrow, then in Milwaukee on the weekend. And, you know, last night the bullpen, it couldn't close. Romano's been great all year, but you could tell 4-pitch walk to kind of set the tone of the ninth. You knew it was getting ugly for him. The arms couldn't survive into extras. Today it got a little bit dicey. Simber got lit up. Where do you think Atkins and company are at with the current stability or lack thereof of the bullpen at this point?
Yeah, I think that you know, I think that they have some really good relievers. They've gotten a lot of work. I mean, there was a period of time where they had three guys that were on, or, you know, three to four guys that were on pace for 70-some appearances, and that's a ton. And so, you know, they played so many close games. They had all the one-run games. And I think that means that you tend to go to your horses more frequently, right? If you get a three- or four-run margin, you can then start to let some of the other guys eat up some innings and maybe pitch an inning in two-thirds or something like that to give somebody a blow. And so I think Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro are looking to fortify their bullpen. I think they're going to look to fortify the rotation. You know, Stripling bounced back today and certainly was better after his last time out, which is good. You know, one of the things you want to see is how everybody's going to have a clunker, but how do you bounce back from that? How do you learn from that? What adjustment do you make from it? And we saw that today, and I think that was a really good thing. And I think that Pete Walker and Stripling deserve a lot of credit for bouncing back a bit. But I do think that they're shopping now. They're looking. They're lining up where they'll go when it's time to go. When other teams dictate that they're willing to start to engage, the Jays will be ready. They'll have scouts out. They'll be evaluating all of the pitchers who are going to be available so that they can be prepared to make a move when the time is right.
Well, they're again off tomorrow and then in Milwaukee on the weekend. That'll be a fun series. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this, Steve.
Okay, my pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst.
Hazy, I wanted to ask you, not everybody where you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle can be the Simeon story of last year, but what are your takes and thoughts kind of early on Chapman? Like, do we know what that guy brings to the table or what he is or what he's all about? I think he hit 30 dingers last year. It just doesn't seem to be very consistent.
Yeah, he had back-to-back years, I want to say in maybe 18 and 19, where he was like top 10 AL MVP type season, where he's putting up numbers. Defensively, he's a superstar, and he has supplied that, and he will continue to supply that. His bat, though, and I think outside of those 2 years, what it would suggest is he's a swing-and-miss guy, and you know he'll give you some pop. He'll probably get to 25 home runs, but he's not a superstar bat. Like, he's not going to be a guy that you are going to see at the top of the order. Like, he's nestled in as a 6, 7, 8 type guy in the order. And, you know, I think he's going to have streaks of hot and cold runs. And when he's hot, he's going to hit for pop. He's going to get on base. He'll be a contributor. But, yeah, it's not Simeon, clearly. It's not Donaldson.
No, it's just Simeon. You're like, okay, this guy's a stud right from the start. And it was just a dream season, and I'm looking at this guy. And all I can say, just from casually watching the Jays, is like, I don't know what you are or what you really bring to the table.
Defensively, he's a stud. Like, that's what he is. But his offensive numbers have really not been very impressive at all. Like, he's been a guy that is he's there more for his defensive prowess, and he's a depth piece at the plate, you know. But I'm looking at him now in 18-19. In 2018, he was 7th in MVP voting in the American League. In 19, he was 6th.
Wow.
Like, that's how – and I'm looking at his numbers, you know, an 864 OPS, 848 OPS, 24 home runs in 18, 36 home runs in 19. That's not – where he's trending towards now. It's going to be, again, probably 25 home runs, give or take. I think his OPS will get up to about 750, give or take, by the end of the year. But he's got to be a great defensive player and a guy that tries to stay consistent, don't strike out too much. You know, that's kind of all you're asking for, and that's all it's going to be this year and next year.
I was watching Vladdy the other night. Where do you think he ends as far as home runs? Like, was he at 17?
I think it's high 30s.
Yeah, like I was hoping to get to 40. He's going to have to go on a bit of a heater.
Yep, which is more than capable of doing.
I think he can get on a heater to get to 35. Like, he needs a heater for that, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, 17, they're not quite halfway through the year.
He's like, hovering. I think he can get to 40. Like, if he gets going a little bit in the second half here. But, like, that's what you expect out of him pretty much every year.
A guy that's going to hit 40. You expect a guy who's going to get on base a ton, which he's still, you know, doing. It's just last year, again, was a bar-setting season for him. And this year, I don't think he's going to be a top three MVP type. Yeah, exactly. You know, like the it's not that the book is out. Like when you're that good of a hitter, man, you make adjustments and you make it difficult on pitchers, which he's still doing.
Right.
But it's not going to replicate what he did last season.
Right.
It's not. He's not going to reach those numbers, and he's not going to end up winning an MVP. But there's still a lot of baseball left. Like he's AL Player of the Week this week. And, you know, if he rolls that into some more consistency, there's still a lot of time to accumulate a lot of stats for Vladdy. And I expect that that's more likely to happen than unlikely to happen. All right, Darren Dreger will join us in studio. His take on Game 4 tonight. Sounds like Kadri's going to play. Point will not for Tampa. Paul Maurice, the man down in Florida. And Austin Matthews, his big night. What does it mean for the Leafs into the future? Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we'll get to our picks for the Travelers. Not the best field. Not the best. It's really, it's
not
spicy pork and
not
broccoli.
The best.
You're talking
it's
about
not...
Rory's there.
Well, DJ has owned that tournament. He's not there. Koepka was supposed to be in it. JT, I think, was going to go, and he's pulled the pin. So, spicy pork and broccoli.
not the best.
I like watching that tourney every year.
Do you? Because you're a Hartford guy at heart?
No.
That's your spot, TPC.
I will tell you, that was my first kind of hanging with the vets experience. Jeff Sanderson, Andrew Castle, Sean Burke, sat after practice. Anybody want to go play? Like three of us are going to play TPC Hartford. And I'm like, I don't even know if I should put my hand up for this venture. But I'm like, yeah, I'll go. And they kind of hemmed and hawed, and they're like, I don't know.
What'd you shoot?
I don't know. It was 25 years ago.
Were you a good golfer back then, too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Darren Dreger in studio. Good to see you, Dregs, as always. Let's get to the Paul Maurice story before we get into the Cup Final and Matthews, et cetera. My read on that would suggest, like, they were committed to Quinville, who's a seasoned veteran, and that's what they want in a coach. And, yeah, Brunette gets screwed over here big time because he took over a dicey situation. He's up for the coach of the year, doesn't end up winning it. But Paul Maurice is in the vein of Quinville, a guy who's been around forever and has presence behind the bench. Is that effectively what happened here?
That's what it boils down to. Bill Zito and, I guess, ownership to some degree to the Florida Panthers, not being overly or deeply disappointed in how little playoff success Florida had. I mean, they won a round, so there's that. But, you know, just looking at the details of you know, how they lost in round two and thinking that maybe an experienced coach could lead this group and find a way to grind the way you got to grind to have some success in the playoffs. And that comes with experience. And, you know, from Paul Maurice's standpoint, he had a select few teams that he was willing to go to. You know, just for a myriad of reasons. You know,
maybe the weather was a factor.
Well,
Darren?
For sure that would be a factor.
Tax-free situation.
Yeah, that's, you know, the term. It's a 3-year term. Yeah. You know, not that he probably needs the money, but, you know, he's got stuff he wants to do with the rest of his life. But so it had to fit from a family perspective. I think Florida would have been a strong option for him. Dallas, they go the direction of Peter DeBoer. Nashville extends John Hines. That would have been a fit. But I think that's what it would have come down to, is three out of the 32 teams.
That team's a hell of a team, too. Yeah. Like, it's not like
how did they put that on Bruno? Like, how did they get swept by Tampa they just, it's
you
Bruno's
know what?
Fault?
Honestly, I don't know if this sticks out for you guys. It's that one, you know, the Kucherov to Ross Colton play and what, 1.8, 3 seconds left in that play.
Yeah,
where
Kucherov behind the net.
Yeah, where he had his fourth line on the ice.
Yeah.
That was, I had several coaches reach out to me going, that was a no-no type of thing. That was a rookie mistake. Now, you can't lay that. Tampa outplayed Florida, and Bruno can't put the skates on to make Huberto play better. No, Huberto didn't play well, Bobrovsky. Like, that's on hit. But I just think I circled that as a moment where they might go, we need a seasoned guy that doesn't have a situation that, because that game was going in overtime.
Yeah. But what had to happen, you know, again, Bruno deserves credit.
He does.
You know,
he's
took that team over early in the season.
Yes.
Right? Amid trying circumstance. Like, if you know that, then tell him at the end of the season, look, We need an experienced guy.
Right.
So you're not getting the bench back. You can have some time to consider if we get the right experienced candidate.
Right.
You know, you want to stay on as an assistant coach or an associate coach. We'll bump up your salary a little bit. He's got a year left in his contract. Then you can, you know, decide what you want to do, go a different direction next year. To drag it out and to talk to Rick Tocchet and to talk to Paul Maurice and to go through a process to let his assistant coaches go.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole experience from Andrew Burnett's perspective had to be challenging. And I'll tell you this, Paul Maurice has a ton of time for Andrew Burnett. I think he'd prefer that Andrew Burnett stay in Florida and work with him. That's not going to happen.
So these GMs, they think they're such smarty pants.
This is
like, do they not understand? They're all just hiring the coaches that another guy fired. Like, I don't understand that. Like, if you're going to, like, if you're so desperate to fire Bruno, don't you, like, think outside the box? And it's like, I'm not going to say it's a Babcock type, like something that's just not another guy that was just doing it somewhere else. I just don't understand it.
Well, and that could be what Yzerman is waiting for in Detroit. Right?
Well, but at what point?
You
like,
know, you've got
Yzerman
Halpern,
might be,
got Lalonde, you've got assistants that, you know, appear to be close and ready. So is that a new perspective, fresh start, because they don't have hard NHL head coaching experience?
But I get what you're saying, but there are guys throughout the league where you're like, that coach would fit my system, fit my program better.
Right.
Like Paul Maurice, you know him better than anybody in this room. Like you had him, you've got a relationship with him. I've only dealt with him on the outside. But he's a good coach, by all accounts, you know, was liked by his team, not everyone. But there's an expiration date. Daryl Sutter's going to get fired at some point. Guy won Coach of the Year this year.
Yeah.
You know, it happens. You know, Torts gets recycled. I think Torts is the right guy for Philadelphia based on what they've got going there.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, they must see something, whether it's they don't want a hard ass in there because maybe that group wouldn't respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. But if Mo seems to be their fit, maybe they have him get them to the next level, over the hump to the next level.
Sometimes, Jamie, just what you said, those guys wouldn't respond to a hard ass. That's when I think they need a hard ass, because it's like non-negotiable. You're getting it, so deal with it.
Yeah. Well, that might be the group, because I don't know the personalities of Barkov or Huberdeau or right down that Ekblad. Like, that team won the President's Trophy.
Yeah.
They were unbelievable this year. They just didn't seem to lose. But you run up against Tampa, which is a fantastic team, and do you just run the same team back or run the same program back, or do you look for change going, we need to find a coach or somebody to put us over the hump? That's what they're probably thinking.
Again, obviously they thought they had that with Quinville, and we know what happened, and that was out of their control, and Quinville's out.
Yeah.
As for where the Leafs stand, another team that there was respect in the handshake line, so that's worth something.
You're never going to get over that.
I'll never get over that quote, ever. It's almost more memorable than what happened last night, is that quote. But the Leafs, you know, there's going to be moving parts, and I saw CJ on Insider Trading last night saying Mikheyev is looking for and maybe thinks there's a market somewhere between $4 and $5 million a year. If that's the case, he's gone.
Yeah.
But Campbell's different. Like, Campbell, I'm sure, is going to look for as much money as he can get. Like, he's into his 30s. He's got a cash. I don't blame him for that. But the Leafs have to be, I think, more delicate with that position, Dregs. And we can go around the table on this. You can try to cut costs any position possible, but you can't mess with the productivity of that position.
Yeah.
Like, if you pick the wrong guy just because he's cheap, your season might be done before
it starts. Can't happen
this
time around, Brian.
Cannot happen. No. Cannot happen. And that means you got to pay Campbell a little bit more and cut somewhere else. You got to do it.
Yeah, but what's a little bit more? I mean, are you talking $6 million, six and a half?
But no. Sorry.
But by all accounts, what's
asking for, right?
But let me point this out, okay? Let's say it's, okay, you can have him, or you're going to get two guys that you don't want. But you're only going to pay him collectively $4 million. What the hell does that do for you?
You just had one last year, and look what he was all about.
Mrazek,
Wasn't good.
Look, as Chris Johnson reported on Insider Trading, what's curious about this to me, and you know, maybe it's just the oddity of having free agency on July 13th. You've got some time, but you know, numbers have been speculated on. Like, we're kind of loosely throwing out six and a half. But you know, Chris is right. There hasn't been any meaningful back and forth between Kurt Overhart, KO Sports, who represents Jack Campbell, and Maple Leafs management, which surprises me a little bit. I would feel like you'd want to, you know, get a real sound idea of what an extension in Toronto looks like. Because, look, Jack might say, I feel like I'm a good fit here. I like the group. You know, we've grown together. You know, maybe the term isn't as significant as...
Is that a strategy from the Leafs, though, saying, we're looking elsewhere. If you want to come to us last minute and say, look, I really want to stay here at this price, maybe they get it done?
Yeah, but... So they haven't talked parameters since the end of the season, but it's a bit of semantics, too.
Right.
They did definitely have contract negotiations prior to the start of the season last year and probably early in the season before things started to wobble, and then you had the injury issues and all of that. Yeah, I'm sure that contract from Toronto's standpoint makes them nervous, but what would make me more nervous is what's available out there.
Yeah. I mean, now you're talking trade market, because if you do want player X, let's say Marc-Andre Fleury, is he coming here? Is he coming to Toronto, or is he going to go, hey, I'm going to do what's best for my family? And what does that price tag look? If you're just looking for goaltenders on straight cash, well, it's the guy who's playing tonight, Darcy Kemper. It's Jack Campbell. You know, who else is out there?
Like Billy Husso, your boy.
See, Husso's interesting. Well, Husso's interesting for me because at 27...
Edmonton's got keen eye.
Well, for sure. And they should... For Billy Husso, there's a guy that you can partner with.
Out there.
You can partner with and let him grow with you.
Yeah.
Like he's... At 27, he's learning to become a starter. He pushed out Binnington this year. He's got some skills, got some ability, and he's not going to cost you $6
million. No.
To me, he looks in that Driedger contract, 3.5 to 4. So that, again, if you had somebody to play with him, then that's a nice tandem where you...
is that somebody?
Well,
don't you think it's a risk, Jamie? Like, Boston kind of, they fed that Allmark kid $5 million.
$5 million.
And I don't know what... he wasn't even the starter.
He isn't. Swayman's 23, and Swayman's going to push him out. But at least you've got guys that are... Like, Swayman's on an entry-level deal.
Yeah.
So they're not paying... They're paying $6 million for two goaltenders.
Yeah.
So, however the money's chopped up, that's different. Allmark, $5 million. So Jack Campbell's probably going, I want every bit of that deal because I made the All-Star team and Allmark got pushed around by Swayman. Although Allmark did start the playoffs for Boston. So it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds. But I'm just not convinced that it's just, hey, I got to overpay or got to have this guy back based on there's nobody else. You got to be creative because you got to get it right this time. I don't know. Hayes, you feel the same way.
I totally agree with you. I guess that's where I'm at, Noodles, is my priority first with goaltending is get the right goaltender who can play. The cap second is my point, where I don't know if they're thinking, wow, we've only got $5 million allotted for this position, so we'll do what we can. That, to me, is asking for trouble. So that's where I'm saying, if you got to go with a tandem that's going to cost you a bit more, or one guy who's going to cost you $6 million, even though you don't want to, you got to do it. Because if the alternative is two guys who can't play, then why are you saving money for your third line if you got a goalie who can't win you any games?
Right.
The third line's meaningless if you got a goalie who sucks and can't play. Like, that's the truth, though.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make sure you allot whatever you have to allot into the goaltending position. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get it right.
And I don't know. Like, Varlamov has a no move, I believe, so he can choose where he wants to go. And Lou isn't just handing him away to anybody for the sake
of
handing him away. So there's goalies that are going to be available. I mean, you're hearing rumblings out of Florida.
No, that's not happening.
That's not happening?
No.
The Bobrovsky situation?
No. Well, I mean, again, he's got a full no move.
Yeah.
He loves Florida. He doesn't want to.
Well,
and I can tell you that the Florida Panthers are perplexed by the media speculation of Bobrovsky.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good because
I had that conversation with two guys today about that and said no.
And he played well for them, too. And Spencer Knight is only 21 years old.
Yeah.
How are you going to win and hope to go deep into the playoffs with a kid who's really unestablished? They put him into the minors this year to give him more experience.
Is there a bunch of teams sniffing around on that Knight kid? They've got to be.
Yes, but I mean, exactly what Noodle said. I feel like that's what they're marching into next season with, is Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight.
But give him experience.
You just continue to give him experience. They really believe that they've got something special in Spencer Knight. So, yeah, I'm sure that there are teams sniffing around because you know, hey, Florida didn't win anything, and right. we're pinning it on Andrew Burnett as a hockey society.
Yeah, which is not
because
right.
Because they're changing the coach, but there's a lot of marks all over that organization that need to be addressed, and Billy Zito, I'm sure, will try and do that.
Yeah.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. So Matthews had himself a night last night.
Did he ever?
And as we know, he's got 2 years left on his deal, which means next July 1, I believe, he can officially sign an extension. What's your Jerry's percentages of that happening next summer?
You know what? I'm going to go high. I'm going to say 70%.
Wow. That's music to the ears of Maple Leaf fans.
70%.
Yeah.
Because that would be a bombshell on July 1. Forget who you're signing. You know, hey, we've just announced Matthews with 1 year left on his deal. We're not letting this thing percolate.
$18 million a year.
Maybe it's another short deal, though. I mean, 5 years was relatively short. Because, look, the salary cap, not to bore our listeners or viewers, isn't going up a ton. And if you're Austin Matthews and you can command 20% of the salary cap, I mean, you're talking about a big beefy.
Hey, maybe it's a 3 or 4 year extension.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'll sign off on that.
That'd be fine. Yeah. Who's not accepting that right now?
We'll just kick the can down the road while you're in the window. The elephant in the room, and it's not disrespectful, is the Tavares contract. So you're tied into 11 there. So
for 3 more years.
Until you've got more flexibility there to actually allot money around the rest of the roster.
Yeah.
Then, you know, Austin, the team has to take steps. Like, they had an amazing season last year. Are they guaranteed to get 115 points next year? Like, that's the thing. That they're going to be up against it. You know, we don't even know who's stopping pucks for them next year. Like, you got Gio extended on a team-friendly deal, but Gio's 39.
Yeah, still
like,
a lot of questions.
There's a lot of question marks. That Kyle's got a lot of work to do this summer to get this team right back to where they were last year.
And the heat is real now.
Oh, for
right?
sure it's
like,
real.
You know, I don't think any of us expected that there was going to be hockey operations full-scale changes, be it coach, management, Brendan Shanahan, any of that. I mean, they're on the clock now. They have to be for next season. They have to be.
You would think so,
Darren. You would think so after
for sure.
You know, 6 years.
But you need success. You need things to build on. And, you know, Hayes, you said it at the start of the conversation, it's not respect, comments, that type of stuff. It's actual results.
Tangible results.
And, you know, you just had a guy who won the Hart Trophy and the Ted Lindsay. Like, he's got a bunch of personal stuff. He wants to get his team through to the next level, too. Same thing like MacKinnon, same thing like McDavid. Yeah. Best players have dragged their teams through this stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Matthews wants to do that next year.
For sure.
What are you expecting tonight, Dregs? It sounds like Kadri will play.
Sounds like it. Yeah. I mean, again, at what percentage? You know, that hand is going to be a problem. I'm sure they have it all numbed up, and mobility will be a bit of an issue, but he'll help. He'll help. We talked about it on the panel tonight. It feels like that win in Game 3 was a huge shift in the series in favor of Tampa Bay. But, you know, pivotal. That's what James Duthie called it. Hey, yo, it's a pivotal game.
I'll tell you what, I think of things very differently, as you guys all know. But it's a massive opportunity for Kadri. Like,
yeah.
It could be like Bobby Bonds scored a goal on a broken. Like, it could be the Kadri game. Like, it could be the game where he comes back and he has a big goal at a big moment, and they go back to Colorado and win the cup. It's just a massive opportunity. I think it's great to see.
Yeah. It's a big storyline for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dregs, enjoy it tonight. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. We'll get to our picks for the Travelers. What are we doing, a 5-pack? Feels like a 5-pack, I think.
Sure.
Only.
Yeah, a 5-pack. Only a 5-pack. And keep teeing up game for the Cup Final tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Oh, my goodness.
Overdrive. PGA picks.
Oh, wow! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
And the Overdrive PGA picks brought to you by the all-new Stealth Irons from TaylorMade, engineered for better shots more often. And
we forgot to mention Uncle Ricky Faldo's gone.
Yeah, Nick Faldo hanging him up, man. He's done with the broadcasting of the PGA Tour. A lot of people wondering if he'll end up on the LIV Tour in like a year.
Ooh.
He's been doing the rounds saying that he has not been contacted. that they have not contacted him, and I don't even know what kind of broadcast they really have going there. They got Jerry Foltz and I don't know who else. But, yeah.
Well, what the hell are they broadcasting for? They're not on TV.
Exactly. It's basically for their website and YouTube and Facebook and some clips to go viral, I guess.
How come they're not on TV, by the way?
I don't have that answer for you. I don't know.
Weird.
I'm sure they'd like to. Why wouldn't you? Like, you'd want to promote. They're in the position to promote. But, yeah, Nick Faldo. Listen, great career, right? Like, we have our feelings about Nick in the broadcast booth, but he's been a voice of golf for a long time.
Yeah, he has, 20 years.
Yeah, and now Trevor Immelman will be the lead analyst for CBS. He's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
He's pretty good. All right, I think I've been selling the Travelers short, right? Like, Koepka's not there. Obviously, DJ's won it in the past. He's not there. Thomas just pulled out with a back injury. But Scheffler's there. McIlroy's there. Cantlay's there. Sammy Burns, Jordan Spieth, Xander, Sungjae.
There you go.
Some of our favorites are still in the pack. So I'm coming off clearly a big win, a very impressive win at the U.S. Open. So I'll give you the first pick. Go ahead for a five-pack.
I'll take Rory. You put me on Rory, and I'll take him. He's too good.
Yep, same thing. Scotty Scheffler, thank you.
By the way, Rory's on the grind. Canadian Open, U.S. Open, now at the Travelers. Like, you saw what goes into that. It's not just quick four rounds of golf.
Well, same thing with Scheffler, man.
Yeah.
He did the same thing, and Thomas was on the verge of doing it, and I guess he hurt his back or whatever, and he's like, I'm out of here. But, yeah, like, it's week in, week out. It's all on the East Coast. It's not a ton of travel, but still, man, they're playing a lot. Playing a lot. All right, I'm on Scheffler. You got Rory. I took Scotty Scheffler. Who do you have with your second pick?
Sammy Burns. Very simple.
Yeah, that is very simple.
Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns is always a good pick. I will take Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth. Still a big name on the PGA Tour. Kicking around. Loyal to the tour. I'll take Spieth.
I'm going to go with a guy that I've always liked, and he's always been my guy.
Don't do it.
Sungjae Im.
I wanted Sungjae this week. I love him on this track. I
what
love
a
Sungjae.
Comment.
I love him in Hartford. I love him. I don't feel great about a lot. Like, a lot of the high-end, the bigger names are not playing that great. I'll take my boy Joaquin Niemann. Mm-hmm. I like Niemann. I know, like, when he gets hot, he can do some damage. He did it at Riviera earlier this year. I think he'll be in contention. I'll take Joaquin Niemann.
I know this one's going to sting you. I'm going to take two guys that are going to sting you. Mm-hmm. Can I do a two-pack? Because I know you're not going to take him, and then you do a two-pack.
Go ahead.
Webb Simpson and Brian Harman.
Brian Harman. I was taking a peek at Harman.
No, you weren't.
I wasn't going to take him, but I was taking a peek. Okay. I'm going to take – all right, this is my final two picks. I'll take my boy Xander Schauffele. At some point, this guy's actually going to win a tour event. And – I'm going to take Mito Pereira.
Dude,
Mr.
why do
PGA.
You keep taking this guy? I told you, you might never hear from this guy again, and you keep taking him.
He's dialed in, man.
He's hoping that he shows up.
I think he will show up, and I think it would be a great story if after puking away the PGA and missing the cut at the U.S. Open, this guy shows up in Hartford and contends. I'll take Mito Pereira. All right, there's your five-pack.
No, we got that's only four each.
Is it? No, I got Im, I got Scheffler.
What are you talking about? You have Im.
Or no, you have Im. I don't remember who we talked.
You
Noodles,
got
you
one more pick
down?
Each. I'll go first.
Okay,
I'm going to go with Rick Finau.
Tony Finau. Okay, I like that pick. All right, I'll take Cantlay. Okay, he's sitting there.
That's five.
I'll take Cantlay.
I was
okay.
Writing them down. I'm watching him.
Sorry,
write
it's my
down.
Bad. I don't. The whole two-pack thing screwed me up. But I'll take Cantlay. He has really not had a lot of success on tour. He's actually been downright bad at times. Like, he missing cuts, and but
any
he's got the
long shot
game.
Pick.
No, he. I mean, he's a huge name. Like, he won the FedEx last year. He's more than capable of putting it together for 4 days.
Yeah.
The Overdrive PGA Picks brought to you by the all new Stealth Irons from TaylorMade. To learn more about the latest TaylorMade products, visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca. Game four tonight, Cup Final. Let's see what's in store, man. Yeah. I think that goaltending is going to factor in a lot tonight. Fully expect that. Nazem Kadri, this could be a big story. Big story. If he can compete and actually contribute, that'll be huge. So we'll see what's in store. We're looking forward to it. Enjoy that. Enjoy your evenings tonight. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.